Chapter 35. Have you seen Deppa by any chance? Obi-Wan asks distractedly, most of his attention on the forms he's attempting to fill out. Commander Gray was looking for her, but she's not answering her comm. Rex blinks, lifting his head from where he's more focused on catching glimpses of Obi-Wan's long fingers than doing his own work, and tries to remember the last time he saw her. General Bilaba? She and Commander Doom were going over scans in the hangar last night, I think. They sparred with me and Echo for a bit, but they left around midnight. Echo. Obi-Wan pauses, frowning, clearly trying to put a trooper to the name. A shiny? Not quite anymore, Rex allows, and Torrent isn't even Obi-Wan's company. There's no reason for him to remember all the members of it. But it still makes something in Rex's chest curl warm and soft that he does. He's one of the Rishi Station survivors. The other one, Fives, was with the General. Oh, Obi-Wan says, grim, and Rex can see his hands curl like he wants to fist them. Doesn't, but it's a near thing. Anakin will keep him safe, and Mace will, too. They'll certainly try. The odds aren't exactly in Five's favor, though, and unease curls in Rex's gut. It's been a constant companion these last few days, but harsher now, when he's sitting still, with thoughts of Echo's desperately contained worry so close. When he's not doing anything, and Five's kicks and Cody are stranded somewhere in Sith space. The General's being there is bad enough, but I know they'll protect the generals, Rex says quiet, and it's more honest than he ever intended to be. But who's going to keep them safe if the generals get hurt? Obi-Wan is watching him, steady and full of something. Faith, maybe. Rex can see it in his eyes, can feel the force of it like a touch against his skin. Care, maybe. Obi-Wan has never stopped caring. Feels so desperately and deeply that Rex has thought more than once that he's going to hurt himself with it. And he reaches out across the corner of the table, curls his hand over the back of Rex's wrist. The touch is silent reassurance, edged with an unwavering certainty that there will be an end to the struggles. And Rex has to swallow hard. On Kamino, everyone told stories about the Jedi. Wild, improbable things gleaned from archive data, and the trainers and the scientists and mashed into shape. But none of the stories ever had anything at all on Jedi like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Not a one. We'll find them, Obi-Wan says. Have heart, Captain. Mace and Anakin are two of the kindest men I know. They won't let anything happen to Kix and Fives and Cody. Rex looks at him, takes a breath. There's a curl of red-gold hair sliding down Obi-Wan's forehead again, and his eyes are steady, fixed on Rex in a way that makes something settle pleasantly heavy in Rex's chest. He could... A sharply cleared throat shatters that train of thought, and Rex twitches hard. Obi-Wan jerks his hand back, half rising, and turns sharply to face the clone standing behind them. Commander Nao, he says, sounding torn between relief and chagrin. Was there something you needed? Rex, however, has settled firmly on annoyance as far as reactions go, and he eyes Nao narrowly as he rises to his feet. Gets eyed right back because as easygoing as Pons is, Nao isn't. They decanted him early or something, Rex is sure. Bastard is the only part of his personality that had a chance to develop. Transmission from Coruscant, Nao says coolly, and turns his attention to Obi-Wan, dismissing Rex completely. The Senate's PR marked it urgent. There's the faintest twitch to his mouth. 7 times, unless I miscounted. Obi-Wan groans, but takes the offered datapad. 7 times. And it's not even Anakin's fault this time. What could have gotten them so bent out of shape? No idea, sir, Neo says. As soon as he's passed over the pad, he falls back into parade rest. And Rex? Rex doesn't trust that at all. Neo's looking far too happy for any sort of good to come of this. He narrows his eyes at the commander, but Neo ignores him completely, gaze fixed on Obi-Wan. A news story just hit the holonet, Obi-Wan murmurs and flips to the next page. Lots of control the spin and all that, but I don't know why they'd bother alerting us. He trails off, and Rex watches his eyes widen with a sinking feeling. Sir? He asks, resigned. It takes Obi-Wan a very, very long moment to answer. He stares down at the pad as though he can't quite believe his eyes, and then slowly raises his head, looks right at Rex, and says, in a very odd tone of voice, Rex, is there anything you wanted to tell me? There are several things, but not one of them is appropriate to say with Neo standing 4 paces away. Sir? Rex asks warily. Or rather, Obi-Wan says, perfectly polite, in a way that has teeth. Do you think there's anything Cody would want to tell me? Oh! Rex clears his throat, ignoring the way Neo is suddenly staring at him. I couldn't say, sir, he offers carefully, since I'm not Cody. No, Obi-Wan agrees amiably. You aren't, which is why I'm going to assume you didn't get married to one of my friends and then proceed to not tell me, or, his voice cracks with indignation, even bother to invite me to the wedding. Rex winces. Now is probably not a good time to mention that he was at the wedding. He was planning on telling you, he says. Mostly certain of that. Kind of. But, you are not surprised, Obi-Wan observes, and folds his arms across his chest. Rex, exactly how long have Mace and Cody been involved? There's no good way to answer that. I only found out they were involved when Cody sprang the wedding on me. We'll just raise more concerns. But anything that tries to guess at a timeline will only make Obi-Wan think Rex knew. And he most definitely didn't. With a grimace, he offers. I only found out recently, sir. I couldn't say, but Pons thought it was a while. Throwing Pons under the speeder comes with a flicker of regret, but not much. Pons doesn't have to serve almost every mission with Obi-Wan, and Rex does. And besides that, Rex would probably throw himself in front of a speeder to keep Obi-Wan from looking sad. Pons is a small sacrifice in comparison. Instead of looking sad, though, Obi-Wan closes his eyes, like he's praying for patience. Well, he says, regardless, it was more than long enough for rumors to reach Dooku. Oh no. You said something hit the holonet, sir? Rex asks, resigned. And when Obi-Wan thrusts the pad at him, he takes it gingerly, turns it around, expecting accusations of abuse from the Seps, or Dooku decrying the Jedi for heresy, or... He drops the pad. A hand gesture from Obi-Wan catches it before it can hit the deck, and Obi-Wan sighs. The curve of his mouth is rueful. Congratulations on your citizenship, Captain. Commander, he says. But Rex is still too tangled up in the image of the headline to even register the words. GAR clones granted freedom through marriage clause, it reads in very large, obnoxious letters, and Rex can't quite breathe. Citizenship? He repeats dumbly, unable to quite believe it. Through Cody's marriage? Obi-Wan reclaims the pad, skimming it. Yes, he says. It's certainly legal, if archaic. If I'm remembering the age of that particular part of the charter correctly. Dooku must have figured it out once he caught wind of Mace getting married. His mouth curves into a thoughtful frown, and he rubs at his beard. Well, if he's trying to sow chaos, this is certainly a good way to do it. Citizenship, Rex repeats, still stalled on that point. The tone finally seems to register for Obi-Wan, and he looks up, meeting Rex's gaze. A small smile crosses his face, and he sets the pad on the table, takes two steps and catches Rex's hand. Yes, he says, soft. Cody received citizenship by marrying Mace, and through this clause, it applies to all close relatives. And, under Mandalorian law, you are all kin, so all clones are now citizens of the Republic. I think I need to sit down, Rex wants to say. Can't quite manage the words, but he swallows hard, glances over at Neo. Neo is frowning, though it doesn't seem like he's nearly as shocked as Rex feels. That's a lot of weight for one clause, Neo says after a moment, suspicious. It's legal. Obi-Wan grimaces faintly. The Order's charter is 15 volumes, each containing thousands of pages, he says. Even the Order's best legal scholars tend to stick with more relevant sections. I've never heard of this particular clause, but I know the book it's from, and I'm entirely sure it's real. Dooku wouldn't spread baseless propaganda, not when someone could easily prove it wrong. And this is on the holonet, Rex says, glancing at the pad again. All the clones are just citizens? Like that? Obi-Wan's expression softens into a smile. Yes, he says firmly. Precisely, Captain. It's well overdue, but all of Dooku's plans, I have to say. I believe I like this one the best. He pauses, expression twisting, and then sighs dramatically. Well, barring the fact that my commander got married without even informing me, and to one of my friends, no less, this betrayal will not stand. Betrayal, Rex repeats, amused. A secret wedding between the Marshal Commander and the Master of the Order, carried out in the dead of night as the product of a forbidden romance? Obi-Wan waves a hand that manages to convey dignified disdain. It's all so melodramatic. Lurid. Trying to apply either of those words to Cody and Mace Windu makes Rex's eyes cross a little. Given Cody's rank, he offers, I don't think there was anything forbidden about it, honestly. It's the principle of the thing, Obi-Wan says, offended, which makes no sense whatsoever. Then suddenly he stops short, and a flicker of dismay crosses his face. Depa, he says, surely Mace would have told her. I certainly don't want to have to be the one to do it. She wasn't at the wedding, so Rex can't say. But still, it's probably better to make sure she knows, rather than letting her potentially find out from Scuttlebutt. Commander, he asks, more than happy to take this conversation down a new track. Do you know where General Bilaba is? Neo frowns. I saw Commander Doom earlier this morning, he says, down by the hangar, but I haven't seen the General since yesterday. Gray was looking for her earlier, too. Rex looks over at Obi-Wan, finds him looking back. There's a distinct sinking feeling in his stomach. and he asks, "Sir, I have a bad feeling about this," Obi-Wan says, resigned. "Search the ship. If she's aboard, we need to find her." Rex doesn't ask where she could have gone if she's not aboard. With Jedi, it's always better to leave things like that a mystery. Tup looks small in the bed, even without the glaring whiteness of the medical bay. They shaved his hair, all except the new braid behind his ear. And Dogma can hardly look at him like this. Knowing what almost happened is terrifying. "He will be fine, Dogma," General Kolar says quietly, and a hand curls over Dogma's shoulder, tightens just enough to be a comfort. Automatically, just as he would with another clone, Dogma puts his hand up to cover General Kolar's, and it's different. General Kolar has longer, slimmer fingers than a clone, his skin a warm black instead of brown. But the grounding warmth of the touch is still the same, and Dogma lets it linger for a long moment before propriety hits him again, and he pulls his hand away. "It was degrading," he says, and the words crack in his throat. If someone hadn't gotten that chip out of him, it could have killed him. "Yes," General Kolar acknowledges, "severe, but it was removed in time. Tup will suffer no ill effects." Something to be grateful for, especially with General T off on a mission. Dogma swallows, nods, and forces himself to stand up. It will still be hours before Tup wakes up again, and he can't sit here the whole time. "Sorry, sir," he manages. "I just..." "Tup is your friend," Kolar says, watching him with dark, steady eyes. "Your care for him is admirable. If you wish to stay with him, that will be fine." Which means that Kolar has something to do elsewhere. Dogma hesitates, but General T's quarters are safe, and no one knows Tup is here. Kolar made a point of registering him in one of the medical bays before he carried him away in secret. And after hearing about the chips, Dogma can't say it's overcautious of him. "I'll stay with you, sir," he says, "if that's all right." He's Kolar's commander now, even if the whole promotion was ridiculous. And he should probably start to act like it. Somehow. Despite having no idea how a commander is supposed to act. It's hard to read Kolar's expression, but Dogma thinks he looks pleased. "Bring a blaster," is all he says. "Colt left one in his room." That's rather less than comforting, but Dogma swallows, nods, and goes to retrieve it. It's not one of the well-used training weapons either, but a real blaster, carefully maintained and clearly from the armory. There's a set of vibroblades, too, with three missing, and Dogma hesitates for a long moment before he picks up the remaining pair, holds them for a moment, trying to figure out where to stick them without his armor, and... "Here," Kolar says, quiet, and Dogma twitches at the sound of steps, turns, and Kolar is already reaching out. He catches Dogma's wrist, light, and pulls his own sleeve up. There's a holster strapped to his arm beneath the tight sleeve of his undertunic. He undoes it deftly, holds it out, and Dogma swallows, but tentatively offers up his own arm. With a nod of thanks, Kolar leans over it, carefully wrapping the straps around Dogma's forearm. The brush of his long hair makes Dogma think of Tup, his skull shaved. Chipped, just because someone wants to use them. He has to swallow carefully, angry but unsure how to manage it. "Wrist sheaths are less practical and more easily discovered," Kolar says. "I will requisition you your own set of armor and casual clothes with appropriate concealment places." I didn't think even commanders were out of armor often," Dogma says warily. Kolar grunts. "I travel frequently and often work alone. As my commander, you will accompany me to places where armor won't be appropriate." Dogma swallows, considering this. He'd been planning, but the general has to come first. Am I still allowed to get tattoos? He asks warily. I was on my face. With a quiet snort, Kolar glances up, and the light catches on the dotted lines of his own tattoos, curling over the arch of his cheekbones, the bridge of his nose, down his chin, and up the largest pair of horns. Aza Brock's tattoos are much like a clone's, he says. Individual, with personal meaning. Whatever tattoo you would like, get it. I have no objections, and no right to them even if I did. You are your own person. A cog, Dogma wants to say. Part of a whole, but meaningless alone. If everyone follows orders, obeys the generals, the machine works, and they'll win the war, but... Kolar is still watching him with dark eyes, and it's startling, after all of Dogma's frustrations with him, to suddenly, vividly remember that Aegon Kolar is a member of the High Council and has been serving on it for years. It's easy to see General T as a High Council member, because she's wise and steady and serene. But Kolar isn't. Not in the same way. Bewildering, then, to see that same wisdom in his gaze as he fastens the last strap around Dogma's arm and steps back. Shock likes to say that Jedi are like clones, Kolar says quietly. In that, for both of us, the individual and the group are one and the same. And it's true. But it is my belief, too, that the group is the same as the individual. One does not function without the other. If a group is simply the same piece repeating, there is little worth to it besides numbers. Each individual adds structure, form. No one piece is any less valuable than the others, because without any of them, the group is lesser. It is why the Republic still stands, although we are outnumbered. Every clone and every Jedi is worth 1,000 battle droids. They have only numbers. We have something that matters more. Dogma's throat is tight, and he looks away, looks down. The sheath on his arm is worn leather, still warm from Kolar's skin. And there are carefully etched images in the leathers, curling vines, leaves, flowers that Dogma can't recognize. It looks not mass-produced. Special, like someone made it for Kolar himself, and he's carried it every day since. It was a gift from my master when I was knighted, Kolar says, as though he can sense the direction of Dogma's thoughts. She is a Neti, so she decorated it with the plants of my homeworld.
Dathomir? Dogma guesses.
Kolar's mouth tightens.
Males Abrox do not fare well on Dathomir, he says, resigned more than bitter. No, I am from Iridonia.
After a moment, his expression lightens, and says,
Jedi do not have possessions, but I carry more weapons than most Jedi, and Master Tra thought it would be a good choice for me.
Dogma swallows, running his thumb over the sheath. I can't. It's yours, he says. Clones don't have possessions either, and he knows what something like this must mean in light of that. I can't take it, even for a day. Kolar shakes his head, then takes one of the vibroblades, pressing the hilt into Dogma's hand.
A congratulations, he says, smiling faintly. On your promotion, Commander Dogma.
Dogma flushes. I can't be a commander, he says. What will your battalion say? I'm just a cadet.
I don't have a battalion, Kolar says. It's just you.
Oh, well. Some of the tension eases out of Dogma's shoulders. That's not quite as bad as he had feared. With a quiet snort, Kolar turns, picking up his robes and pulling them over his shoulders.
Ozzy-3 is coming to watch Tup, he says. We're needed at the landing platform.
Just knowing that Tup won't be left alone makes it easier to nod and say, Yes, sir. Dogma follows Kolar out, watching the room seal behind them, and takes a breath. feels the weight of the sheath beneath his training uniform, the strangeness of carrying a blaster when out of armor, but it feels better, a little. Like Kolar answered a question Dogma didn't even know to ask. Like he can hold his head up a little higher as he follows the general, his general, down the halls and out into Kamino's near constant rain. The landing platform is otherwise deserted, but Kolar lifts his head towards the clouds as if he knows exactly where to look. As if he doesn't notice the rain, either, even though it's already soaking his robes and dripping down his hair. Is it General T? Dogma asks, a little warily. He isn't sure why he needs to be armed on Kamino, but the general has been right so far, so he's not going to argue. No, Kolar says shortly, and lifts a hand, pointing towards a section of clouds above the ocean. Master Galia. As if on cue, a sleek fighter dips through the storm, all but skimming the surface of the water as it makes its approach. Behind it comes another, then another, a whole wing dipping down through the clouds and heading straight for them. The one in the lead has the insignia of the Jedi Order on the nose, and as it slows and comes in for a landing, Dogma catches a glimpse of nose art on the other fighters as well. A clone squadron, following the general, and that seems serious. Kolar hardly waits for the fighters to settle before he's moving forward, raising a hand against the rain. As he does, the Jedi's fighter opens, and she vaults out, a black Tholthian woman, with a stern expression. It lightens faintly at the sight of Kolar, and she reaches out, clasping wrists with him. Kolar leans in, and she does too, and they butt heads gently, in a motion that's almost like clones greeting each other. But decidedly more Zabrak, Dogma decides. Again, the other general says. I wasn't sure you'd hear. Where's Shaak?
Called away on an urgent matter, Kolar says, and frowns as he looks her over. Adi, you're injured.
Healing, she says dismissively, and turns to look at a clone approaching her. Egan, this is Commander Oddball. Oddball, my fellow council member, Egan Kolar.
Honored to meet you, General, Kolar offers, saluting. His gaze flickers to Dogma, curious, and Egan blinks, then waves him forward. My commander, he says. Dogma.
Even though Dogma's braced for laughter, Oddball takes it in stride. He nods to Dogma, too, respectful, like they're equals, and then says,
Want us on the ground, General Galia?
Galia glances at Egan, who looks back, and there's a moment of silent communication between them.
Yes, she says. All the men.
Egan?
The slant of Egan's mouth is grim. The files? He asks.
Galia's expression twists. Those chips are meant for us, she says, to make the men think we're traitors and then execute us.
Something dark and cold washes through Dogma's veins. Not able to help himself, he looks at Oddball, who still has his helmet on, but doesn't so much as twitch at the revelation. He already knows, then.
That was Commander Colt's assumption,
Egan agrees. He glances back at the facilities, then says,
Kamino has a senator now.
They're a Republic world, bought and paid for. Galia agrees. Flat. She cocks her head, studying Egan, and asks, You have a plan?
Egan's smile is more a baring of teeth than anything.
You're the senior council member, he says, but Dooku is the reason the chips were implemented.
Galia's lips compress into a thin, furious line for half an instant before she controls herself, breathes out. She tilts her chin up, white tendrils shifting over her shoulders, and nods sharply. If the scientists here were knowingly consorting with the separatist leadership, we have full authority to seize control of the facilities, she says. And it's the calm of an ocean with the tide rolling in, ready to bury the shoreline. She waves, and there's an organized rush as clone troopers leap down from their fighters and fall in. Master Kolar, Commander Dogma, lead the way. Nala Se and I have business. The staircase ends in a hallway of polished black stone and blood-red light, draped with banners bearing the Sith Emperor's seal. It's eerie, hushed, and the whole place reeks of the dark side. Is anyone else getting serious bad vibes? Fives mutters. And this is the wariest Mace has seen him since they crashed, practically twitchy as he turns to take in the wide hall. Like, worse than just Sith planet in general vibes. I feel like a Vornsker is standing right behind me.
Vornskers are likely the least alarming thing in this building, Mace says dryly. But yes, you feel the dark side. Millennia of it has steeped into the building, and there is too much of a miasma here to ever fully fade.
The one time I was hoping it would be my imagination, Five says, resigned. If anyone sees a blaster or a big pointy stick, let me know.
Fives, Mace thinks with amusement, will do well with a lightsaber. Something to look forward to at the end of his inevitable fight with the Council, overtaking a Padawan who wasn't raised in the temple. Be careful of touching anything, he warns Fives. Cody's sword and many other Sith artifacts will devour Jedi from the inside out.
Fives pales. Touching bad. Got it. I retract my request.
Cody snorts, but looks over at Shmi, and the run of his thoughts is all quick calculation, carefully assessing. Still the right way? He asks.
Shmi nods. And he's above us, she says, and points to a set of stairs leading off the main hall. They twist sharply, rising at a steep slant towards the next floor, and she makes for them without hesitation.
Without even having to look at Mace, Cody catches her elbow. Sorry, he says quietly. Let one of us go first for now.
Shmi's grip tightens on the lantern, but she nods and lets Cody and Mace both pass her to start up the stairs. With the warblade in one hand, Cody takes the lead, and Mace stays half a pace behind him, senses as open as he dares.
Feel anything?
Cody asks silently, grimly.
The darkness clouds everything here. Mace returns, and shares an instant of his impression of the Citadel, all heavy weight and writhing shadows. It's far worse than Coruscant has ever been, far worse than anywhere else on this planet so far. If they stay here too long, it feels like Mace is going to suffocate in it. Almost like the motion is automatic, instinctive, Cody reaches back with his free hand and... well... Mace carefully contains the curl of emotion that curls through his chest, as warm as sun-touched stone at the end of the day. It feels like the temple, feels like home, and Mace curls his fingers into Cody's and tightens his grip. No suffocation, Cody says firmly. Save that for when my general's strangling you for not inviting him to the wedding. Mace raises a brow at him.
Might I remind you, Cody... you also had the chance to invite him to the wedding, and you didn't.
Cody winces.
Don't remind me.
I don't want to know, Five says determinedly. I'm not going to ask. That's not an unnerving thing to jump to at all. And I also take back what I said about your life being boring, Commander.
With a roll of his eyes, Cody rounds the last spiral of steps. And eyes both ends of the hall that runs past it.
Sure, Shiny, he says, unimpressed. Shmi?
Left, Shmi says. And one level up. When Mace glances back, her eyes are trained in that direction, focused like she can see Anakin even through the floor. She's frowning faintly, though, and after a moment she says, I think he's moving away from us.
Towards the back of the building, probably. Wherever the hangar is. That's doubtless where Anakin is headed.
Mace inclines his head and says grimly,
towards one of the sources of the darkness. We need to hurry.
Great, Cody says grimly. Guards?
If there are any, I can't tell,
Mace says. And from the look on Cody's face, he knows as well as Mace that that hardly means they don't exist. Cody's hand tightens briefly around his,
then loosens, and he slips through Mace's fingers and takes a step ahead, shoulders squared. "All right," he says. "Let's go." Unease twists through Mace's stomach, and he looks at the line of Cody's back, the tilt of his head, for a very long moment before he picks up his pace and follows. He's had a bad feeling since they landed on this planet, and it's just redoubled, settles, heavier than the shadows around them, in his chest, and he almost wants to reach out and take Cody's hand again. But Cody's attention is fixed ahead of them, mind sharp, ready for the danger they're facing. And Mace breathes through the urge and follows him.